My name's Michelle Owu and I'm carrying out this interview on behalf of the Wellcome Trust for the One Another Project. The date today is the 3rd of August 2009 and the time is 8:25 a.m. Could you tell me your name, your age and where you come from, please?
My name is Simon Duden. I'm 40 years old. I'm from Maidenhead.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Can you remember when you first heard about the project?
It might have been the Evening Standard, or it might have been on an internet site. I like the work of Anthony Gormley, so I would have picked his name up from somewhere and seen this project and thought, gosh, that looks interesting.
What's interesting about it, particularly from your point of view?
Well, I think one of the things I really enjoy about Anthony Gormley's work is that I find his work very accessible. And this struck me as a very accessible piece, as a piece that people are just walking past, like his bronze statues, like the blind light thing, which you don't have to have a doctorate in arts to be able to understand on some deeper level. It's something that will have some resonance for everybody, and for those of it who wish to analyse further, that's great, but actually for everyone else, there's an accessibility there, which I enjoy.
How did you feel when you found that you had a place?
I was very pleased to have a place and also slightly nervous and confused about what it was that I'd be doing. It took me some time to come to a view of what that would be. I found it quite an interesting process in itself. Should I try and be a representative of some group which I'm part of? So, for example, I'm from Norfolk, I work in the book trade, there are various, I like certain music, I have certain other personal characteristics. But who appointed me the spokesperson of any of those groups? So you know, should I try and represent some group like that? Should I try and express something through some means or other, some part of myself? But anything that's interesting would probably be a bit too scary to be up there expressing. Anything I'm prepared to express is probably rather dull and bland, so I didn't go down that route.
Describe what you're wearing for me, please.
I'm wearing a white jumpsuit. It is part of a Stig outfit, and my objective, if I can achieve it, is to hopefully put a smile on a few people's faces on their way to work, and if anyone can feel better because they've seen me standing up there on the plinth, I'll be happy.
Tell us more about the Stig.
The Stig is a racing driver who works for the TV show Top Gear. His identity has been kept a secret. When the original Stig reveals his identity, they mock killed him off. The idea of, and they brought another racing driver in as the Stig, who wears the white suit, a copy of which I'm now wearing. The Stig is played for laughs, it's a character, so he's often wheeled out like a piece of machinery and put in places. And the sort of anthropomorphism of the Stig is very ambiguous, and it's very well played for laughs in some circumstances by the Top Gear team.
Why was it a character you wanted to dress as?
Partly because I think the concept of being on your way to work and seeing the Stig on the plinth made me chuckle. I'm a 40-year-old man, so maybe that's it, but it made me chuckle. So partly that, partly given that I'm not going to be expressing anything deep about myself, actually me as a person is irrelevant to the piece that I'm doing. It's about the character. So to be behind the suit and the mask is entirely appropriate, actually. So all those things seem to work somehow.
How do you feel about being anonymous?
I feel quite... Well, the anonymity isn't, I guess, a huge thing for me. In my job, I have to stand up and talk to lots of people sometimes. I'm not shy of standing up and performing. I've done stuff in Edinburgh Fringe when I was a student, that kind of rubbish. So, obviously, very... You know, ordinary nonsense stuff. But you know, I have no problem.
Sorry, there's quite a lot of background
noise
at the moment.
If you need to re-ask the others.
Sky are just making a lot of noise next door. I do apologise, please carry on.
No problem. If you need to, do I need to go back?
It's fine.
Or?
No.
Okay. No, I have no problem. I'm not nervous about standing up in front of people. I'm very willing to do that. But for this particular thing, the idea that I came up with didn't require me. The other idea that I had was doing a treasure hunt. I think that would have been far too elaborate and far too involved. But the idea of getting people involved via Twitter or something and tweeting clues or holding up signed the clues to the next clue which my accomplice would have hidden, and I just had pictures of me doing that with three people in the square and no one paying any attention, thought, this is a bad idea, let's do something else. So this is a little bit less ambitious, I guess, than that.
Are you going to be doing any activity while you're up there?
Most of the time I shall be static because that's in character. I will occasionally break out of character and do a silly change of direction to a Macarena or something like that. Again, with the objective really of just putting a smile on someone's face, and if I achieve that, then I've won.
What would you be doing if you weren't here this morning?
If I'm here this morning, I would be reading some briefing notes for some meetings I've got at work.
Tell me a bit more about your role.
I run the Publishers Association, which is the trade body for the publishing industry in the country. My job is to represent the publishing industry to government, to other stakeholders domestically and at European level. So that's what I do for a living.
How do you go about doing that?
Well, there are particular issues that affect the publishing industry, some of which are obvious ones, like copyrights are an important one. We need to make sure we're in the place where creators of works are allowed to benefit from their creations, and people who invest in those are able to hit a return, while simultaneously not locking up teenagers in jail for doing what feels natural to them and what they feel like they should be able to do. So trying to find that balance and working with other stakeholders like consumer groups and like the ISPs and politicians of all kinds, and also players like Google and so on, that's an important part of my role. I guess another part of my role is to evangelise publishing and publishers and the value that publishers add in the selection, which is really the rejection of content, the editing of it, and then bringing diverse communities of readers or users is a more modern term, together with that content in ever-changing ways.
What sort of impact do you think standing on the plinth will have? Will it have any impact?
On me personally? Or on people who see me? I hope on people who see me, to say my objective is if people can go to work feeling a bit better, or I saw some idiot stood up on the plinth, made me smile, made me feel a bit better at the start of my Monday morning, that would be great if I could do that. On me personally, it'll be I've had a number of interactions with Trafalgar Square over the years, actually. I was on the poll tax riots some time ago, and then on an anti-Iraq war demonstration, I ended up sitting three places away from Billy Bragg at the foot of Nelson's Column while he was playing his wonderful Sex and Socialism songs, you know, out, and that was an experience. So I've had a number of experiences, interactions with Trafalgar Square, which have involved me being up on one of these sort of erections round there, and so this will almost be like the next in a series. Obviously over decades, not years. This is over, I'm a 40-year-old man. This is when I was 18, 20 years old. This is some time ago. But yes, it's just another interaction with Trafalgar Square, and I'm sure as I get older and older, they'll become increasingly staged, but there may be further ones, who knows.
Just going back to your job for a moment. How did you become involved in publishing? Had you always been interested in books?
My career is not really a career so much as a series of accidents. I actually did maths at university. Realised I didn't want to be an accountant or an actuary or anything else starting in AC, so I programmed computers because it was about all I could do. I ended up working for a satellite company and working on satellites. And then I ended up being a freelance computer person. And then I ended up running the trade association for freelance computer people. By a series of, I turned up to a court case, they clearly needed a pair of hands, I had a pair of hands, 6 months later I was on the board, then I ended up running the thing. Got very disillusioned, disenchanted, you know, trade associations are horrible, negative things that exist to stop anything ever changing or happening ever. So very unhelpfully kind of stropped off a bit, swore I'd never work for another trade association again, and here I am in this job, so clearly I'm a liar as well as incapable of planning a career, but there you go.
How would you describe yourself as a person?
Overweight at all. I don't know, I guess, how to describe myself as a person. Well, I'm the father of six children, and that's a major thing for me. I just adore my children, they're kind of everything for me. So I spend as much of my time as possible, which in my busy job, unfortunately, isn't very often, very much, as much of my time as I can with my kids. And I think that kind of ties back, and when they say that men never grow up, and I guess for me that's certainly true. So although I'm a sort of serious, mature professional in one part of my life, I'm really not in my real me in my other part of my life. So I guess, well, I hope I'm friendly, I'm garrulous. Like everybody, fundamentally I'm insecure, and that insecurity comes out in different ways, and I express hide parts of myself in the same way that everybody else does, so I'm no different from anyone else there. I am 40 years old, which does force some re-evaluations, more so than 30 did. But I'm comfortable about those. I'm a lot more comfortable in myself at 40. I feel more comfortable with the fact that I'm not necessarily good at absolutely everything, and I've come to realise it doesn't actually matter. I don't need to be. It doesn't matter if not everyone likes me. Some people will like me even though I'm not brilliant at everything. And that sounds like a really stupid thing to say, but it took me a few years to get there. So.
Tell me a bit about your children.
My eldest daughter is now 10. I have 4 girls and 2 boys. They all have ginger hair, because my wife has ginger hair. They are just full of joy. They each have their own very different personalities. Rachel, my eldest, is a classic first child, quite sure of herself, quite organised. Hannah, my second child, is a classic second child, full of joy and you know, naughtiness and fun and all the rest of it. Daniel is my third child, my eldest son, is very different in character from the girls. Boys and girls are different. We've gone through the ages so far where the boys are possibly slightly easier to manage. I know that's about to change. That he's 7. He's quite staid and quite sensible, loves his football, is far better at it than I ever was, to my absolute disgust. I'm rubbish at football, and it'd be good if he was too, but unfortunately he's not, he's actually quite good. Emma, my 5-year-old, Emma is slightly withdrawn. She had to have a major operation when she was 8 months. Her immune system hasn't really been quite the same since, so she's a little bit withdrawn, but when she smiles, her face kind of lights up and she's got this wonderful sort of bubbly energy about her. Isabel's a 3-year-old and a wonderful, naughty, cheeky little 3-year-old who will say the wrong thing, know it, and delight at the mischief that she's causing. And my littlest one is a small boy called Ben, who is 1 and who toddles around and grabs hold of your ankles and says, "Daddy, daddy, 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 daddy," and as soon as you've picked him up, wants mummy. That's Ben.
Did you always want a big family?
No, we said we'd have 2 or 4, and we ended up having 6, and actually we might not stop. So, when we had 2, we realised either we're going to have the other 2 now, or we're never going to go back. Once you're out of nappies, you probably never want to go back there. So we carried on, and we had the other 2. It sounds absurd. It wasn't until I was physically holding my 4th child in my arms that it occurred to me, you can't fit 4 children, 2 adults in a car, because each child these days has to have their own car seat for health and safety reasons. So on an emergency basis, I bought a people carrier. That's a seat that people carry. Well, a couple of bottles of travel you soon put paid to that. Then we've got to have 6. So now I drive a minibus. It's pragmatic. It's wonderfully practical. I mean, you can get bikes for everyone, luggage for a week, all the rest of it in the back of the 0-60 if you're lucky. You know, it'll get you there eventually. It's not the kind of car a Stig would ever drive. I can't imagine the Stig taking my car around the Top Gear track anytime soon. But yeah.
You mentioned you'd performed at Edinburgh.
Oh God! We did an adaptation of Dubliners by Joyce's Dubliner stories, and then alternate nights with a god awful student comedy, which we thought was hilarious. Of course, it wasn't.
When was this?
This was back in 1988. It would have been 1988.
Have you performed since then?
Not on a stage in that sense. So I'm sadly devoid of any talent, which is a slightly limiting factor in my acting career. So we did that, and we enjoyed ourselves, and we made, I think, £5 over the 3 weeks. We didn't lose any money, which was a major thing. We were the only Joyce on the fringe, so that was easy in a way. I haven't done that since. I used to play the piano a lot as a boy, didn't so much at university. Largely, if I'm honest, because there were lots of people who played it much better than me. At school, I was regarded as quite a good piano player. At university, there were people who were reading music and are clearly far more talented musicians than I'll ever be. So I kind of stopped doing it. And I play occasionally, you know, for the kids, and I do the odd wedding for family and stuff like that, you know. But I don't really perform anymore in a sense.
Do you have any expectations about what it might be like today?
I suppose, it's interesting, my initial reaction internally was hot. because I'm in a jumpsuit and the sun's shining up there, but I'm lucky it's not raining, which would have been the worst thing. I guess because there are, I don't feel any particular nerves. If I was doing my other day, I'd have been feeling very nervous at this stage, because I'd be nervous there'd be no one out there, and people would maybe give me 2 minutes of their attention, then realise that they weren't going to get involved and get the prize and then go away, and it would be a horrible nightmare. So I don't feel particularly anxious at this point. I'm not scared of heights, so that should be okay. I'm curious just to see what it'll be like there, because I like the idea of being central London, somehow being isolated. I'm very gregarious, I love people, but sometimes it's nice to be on your own. And I like the idea of standing up there, not having to interact or to talk with anyone, because that's the character that I'm in. And actually there's a kind of, you know, there's a Zen thing there, there's a kind of being in your own space a bit about it, which I'm also curious to explore.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Gosh, I feel like I've talked an awful lot, so I think I'd love a glass of water if I may have one, please, and that's probably it.
Thank you very much.